flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Looking for a new home should be exciting, not frustrating. That's why Homes.com might just be the best home shopping site out there. Imagine searching for your dream home without ads cluttering your view. Homes.com's sleek, beautifully designed, ad-free interface makes your search simple and distraction-free. And if you're a parent, you know how important school information is. Homes.com gets it. They're the only site with detailed school and district info from multiple sources, including reviews from Niche. Plus, they've got a super comprehensive and transparent agent directory, making it easy to find the right expert to guide your journey. Oh, and here's a game changer. Homes.com always connects you directly with a listing agent who knows the home best. They even go beyond the basics, offering the most in-depth neighborhood content of any home shopping site, packed with details to help you find a community that feels like home. And the search tools? Unmatched. With 22 data visualization layers, 7 environmental layers, and filters for commute times and architectural styles, Homes.com truly is the home search you've been searching for. Go to Homes.com. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Hey, football fans, it's Patrick Peterson, former 3-time All-Pro NFL cornerback, and now the new host of First and Pod, the podcast that breaks down every game, every week, with new episodes dropping every Monday and Friday mornings. Plus, I'll be highlighting key matchups for DBs around the league on Patrick's Corner. Be sure to subscribe to First and Pod on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're all okay with them. I mean,
more so, yeah.
Given the team right now, like, I'm okay with riding with Tyler Fitzgerald as your second baseman. He seems to deserve a shot. I don't feel great about Mike Yastrzemski being an everyday outfielder again, but seems like that's what's going to happen. I don't feel great about Lamont Wade and Wilmer Flores as a platoon at first base.
Nope.
And the pitching staff, you're going to have to rely on a bunch of people who have never done it before.
Yep.
And it could turn out good. It could turn out terrible.
And the middle of the order is only legit if Elliot Ramos does it again.
Yes.
If Ramos does it again and you can offer Adames and Chapman and Ramos, that's an actual middle of the order.
And you hope Jung-Hoo Lee is who we thought he was going
to be. Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know who Chapman is. He's probably going to hit like 240 and hit 23 bombs. And you need support around him, and hopefully you have that.
Yeah, but, yeah. So, okay.
But when it comes to the expectations conversation, the Giants have done a great job of just putting out every Giants fan's flame over the last handful of years. So if we're coming from a position of expectations, it's, well, I've survived without the Giants. Maybe I can keep surviving without the Giants. It's been the Warriors that have kept me going, and now I'm without the Warriors as well.
Look, by nature, especially in 2025, the sports are also part of this. Baseball, and I've said this many times, even though I love it to death, it's a much more passive watch. It's not as emotional of a sport, even for those of us who love it, because it comes at you constantly. You can go on a 3-game losing streak, and you're like, whatever, like there's another game tomorrow. Huh. You know what I mean? Like a 3-game losing streak for the 49ers feels like death among us. Like it's a 4-week hack through awfulness. It happened last year in the Super Bowl year when they went 5-0 and lost 3 in a row and had a bye week, and people were like, I mean, losing it. You do that in baseball, it's like, oh, the Yankees were in town this weekend, and you're right back on it on the horse on Monday morning. So it's a totally different experience that I think brings out a less emotional reaction, and the Warriors are somewhere in the middle of all of that, I would argue. And so I think that's a piece of this, too. You're going to feel more disappointment in the sports where there's a more emotional reaction and you've got name value that we're talking about. The 49ers and Warriors have name value and the expectations that come with that. And I mean that even from their coaches, right? You have Steve Kerr, Kyle Shanahan, big name players right beneath them and like a track record. The Giants are like, You know what I mean? Like, Bowmel's here.
He's a good manager.
And yeah, Bowmel's here, and, like, let's get to know these young guys, and is Jordan Hicks going to be a starter or a reliever? Like, it's just a completely different experience. So,
I mean, the face of the Giants franchise is their president of baseball operations.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But he's not going to play.
Yeah, I mean, that's
he's not going to hit the ball.
That's the state of the Giants.
Yeah.
Is the most prominent face of the team isn't playing.
Well, actually, the worst thing that you can, I mean, it's the worst and best thing that you could say about an organization, and it's been true, I'd say, from the moment they stopped winning their rings, maybe certainly from the moment Buster Posey left, for sure, the most popular face of the organization is actually two people. It's their broadcasters. That's awesome and terrible.
It should not be the case.
At the same time.
You want to have a great couple of broadcasters, but you do not want that to be the face of the franchise.
Love them to the end, but, like, what are they doing in the bottom of the ninth other than saying funny stuff?
Yeah. So, I also think the Giants example is, like, the Warriors end of dynasty fast forward like 8 years from now, or maybe even more, maybe 10 years from now, and you hope you're in a better position than the Giants are in. Because the Giants, we can all look back on it now, you know, when they re-signed Belt and they re-signed Crawford, those two did not live up to those contracts. Okay, whatever, but they were franchise legends. You wanted it to happen. And then you hire Farhan, or in the process before that you hire Farhan, and you had the promise of, okay, it's probably going to be a couple of lean years, but you're going to retool in the farm system, you're going to build through the farm, you're going to build from the bottom up, and then you're going to start replenishing the system over and over and over again. And you fast forward to the end of the Farhan era, and you're still one of the worst farm systems in baseball, and you just hope, which is what so much of the Warriors conversation is about, life after Steph. It's why I think there's so many people, Guru included, hung up on Kuminga, because they don't want to be so terrible once Steph retires, and you hope by the time you get to a similar spot that the Giants are currently in after their era of dominance, like fast forward for the Warriors 8 years from now, you hope that they've found their next one yet. The Giants definitely have not found their next one yet. And so it's interesting to compare where those two teams are and where they might be, because the Giants certainly haven't been able to get back on the wagon as quickly as you felt that they might be able to, and the Warriors are staring that problem directly in the eyes, too.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, more on this in a sec. Couple things to get to. First of all, you're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, Odyssey Sports Station. Always live on the free Odyssey app, Twitch, and YouTube, powered by First NorCal Credit Union for a low-rate auto loan. Apply online or just ask for First NorCal financing at the dealer. Also, congrats, Caleb and Livermore. We see you, we hear you, we thank you.
Way to go,
thank
Caleb.
You for listening, and congratulations. We will see you at the knockout tournament March 3rd. He is our ninth winner, but that means that there are 36 more spots to go. Starting tomorrow at 8 a.m. and noon tomorrow, 4 p.m. hour, that's when you listen each and every day to win your way in. So again, tomorrow and Friday, and then for two more weeks running every day right here on 95.7 The Game.
So we've got 20% of our contestants.
Nice math.
One
good job. Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Nerd.
Exactly. I know, right?
I got to fill Dibs' shoes, you know?
Good
He's
Lord.
The math guy.
What are you, Cliff Clavin over there? certain listeners got that joke. Steiny and Goo. If you're listening, hey, how you doing? Anyway, and then there's this. Don't forget the Slam Dunk in Vegas contest, which is already well underway. And you should get in on this right now, and there's plenty of time, and wait till you hear this prize. Someone is going to win travel and accommodations for four. So you get to go and bring three guests of your choosing. You get the plane flight, you get the hotel, and you go to Las Vegas. And then when you get there, each of you, you and each guest, get $5,000.
Oh, my God.
So that is a total of 20 grand. Pocket cash. Boom. That simple. It's the ultimate viewing experience for the first two rounds of the College Basketball Championship. And I know what your next thing is. How do I win that? Literally, all you got to do is listen. That's it. But you got to download the free Odyssey app and do it there. Okay, so go to the Odyssey app, you log in, you listen each day, and the second that you have listened for at least 1 hour, you are automatically entered for that day. And you can do it again the day after that, and the day after that, and the day after that. Every day, you get your daily entry by logging in and listening for a minimum of 1 hour each day. It's a national contest. Download the Odyssey app right now, and you can be headed to Vegas in March with $20,000.
If there's a city to have $20,000 in, Vegas is one of the top ones.
That's strong. The other thing you might do, I don't know if you're allowed to do this, is this within the contest rules? You arrive in Vegas, you get the 20 grand, you turn around, you go home.
Just to make sure you leave with 20
you're
grand.
Like, I don't want the next night in the hotel. I would like to go home with $20,000.
Many things pulling me in different directions
here. A lot of distraction going on up in this piece.
Just to make sure I'm responsible, let's just leave.
How funny would that be? What are you going to do with the 20 grand?
Go home.
Go to the airport and change my flight to now. You could do that.
I'm going to deposit it in my bank account.
Oh, gosh, that's funny. Anyway, so as we're talking through that list and the disappointment level, Giants, Niners, Warriors right now, and sort of how you rank it, we're also throwing out the narratives that we, at least, I don't know if you feel I'm hitting on this, but this is what I hear the most in terms of criticism with regard to the organization. And I know there's some ones that, when we say Steve Kerr hates young people, it's kind of borrowing Dibs' line. I think the other one, you know, Steve Kerr and his rotations, all of these things. And we're kind of playing like fair or unfair. Let's go to the other two. I'll tease the Giants one. The Giants one is easy. The Giants are cheap. So, okay, fair or unfair. What about the 49ers, though? And am I accurate that this is maybe the one that you'd hear the most? Kyle Shanahan's too conservative. Kyle Shanahan's got no guts.
Yeah, it's up there.
And is that fair?
I think it's fair. I think so.
Please explain.
I think Kyle Shanahan is far too safe as a head coach. It's obviously one thing when you have an incredible team, like say they did last year, and you're dominating almost everybody you play, and you're up big, and you're trying to protect a lead. I think it's gotten to a point where he does that too often, and maybe it's through, again, his own success as a coach, where he's fallen into this trap where being safe is how you win football games. But you're not always in a position where you have a big lead and you have something big to protect. And I think it would be better if you get into the mindset of risk-taking isn't bad. There are times to take risks because the reward is pretty darn high if it pays off. I think it's what a lot of the best teams in the league right now are going for. It's what the Chiefs do. Better than almost anybody.
Washington did it big time down the stretch.
And it was a big reason why they got to the NFC Championship game.
Detroit does it a lot as well. And I wouldn't say that was, you know, last year I felt like it was their undoing. This year,
they also rode that to the NFC Championship game last year, and they won the division with it and were the one seed with it this year. And obviously, they have a ton of talent, and it's not just, you know, going for it on 4th and 7 because they're a bad team. Not going to pay off that way. Obviously, you have to have a good team. I think in general, Kyle Shanahan gets too conservative in moments. He gets too scared about making a backbreaking mistake that he misses out on opportunities to, you know, score more points or to win a football game instead of hoping that nothing goes wrong the rest of the way and that they hold on. They get a lead, and this happened with Sean McDermott for the Bills against the Chiefs. They got a 1-point lead in the fourth quarter, and they were just praying for dear life they could keep the ball away from Patrick Mahomes. And 4th and 1, we're going to call a quarterback sneak, even though it hasn't been working. And I know going for it on 4th down is actually kind of aggressive.
Yep, and don't forget, they got it.
They did. The time before, they fumbled it, and they happened to recover it very luckily. I think there's, especially when you're going up against a team like the Chiefs and Mahomes, some kind of juggernaut, you need to take some chances to knock that team off their high horse. And I don't think Kyle Shanahan does that nearly enough.
I'm going to buy a piece of your argument. I'm also going to, I love this text we just got from 408 as far as, like, what's that sentence that people say about the 49ers, and maybe he or she, whoever texted in, just did it maybe a little bit better than I did. Shanahan can't win the big one. And these are all related. They're all related. Like, the concept we're talking about is this Kyle Shanahan, while I think everyone, at least I would hope, on a fundamental level, you realize that this is a good, successful head coach in the NFL, but are there warts that are preventative in some sort of a way? And I know there's some of you that don't even agree with my premise that Kyle Shanahan is a really good, successful head coach. I find it to be inarguable. We've talked to, there's a numbers, and who was the defensive coordinator who we talked to recently who was like absolutely unequivocally the hardest offense to get ready for on a week in and week out basis is Kyle Shanahan. It wasn't on our show. I think it was on McAfee, but somebody came on and said that. Like, still to this day, I can't remember. But bottom line is, whether that matters to you or not, maybe it doesn't. You know this. In league circles, Kyle's name remains gold.
Oh, yeah.
It's gold.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So if that's the premise, is there something that prevents him from winning the big one? And is it baked into what we're talking about, which is conservatism?
To win the big one, you need a certain degree of boldness.
I think what I'm feeling is related to what you're saying, so I'm only going to give this a certain measure of agreement because I am a Shanahan fan. Yeah. I will not stop being a Shanahan fan.
You got to save your spot in his basement.
Well, I think he's a phenomenal coach. I think he's a phenomenal football coach. But if there were a question I had about him, it would be this. And I think it's related to what you're saying about being conservative, is that Kyle's approach feels robotic and formulaic. In other words, it's almost like watching someone coach a football game the way Farhan Zaidi used to build a roster, which is to almost be like, mathematically, this should work.
Hmm.
Right?
Yeah,
I have the play call, and we will get the lead. And then it's almost like he's playing the game before the game even happens. We're going to go out there. We're going to get a 10-point lead. They're going to do what I tell them to do. And then we're going to keep the 10-point lead, and we're going to win the football game. He's largely been right, more often than not, for sure. But my questions for him come when things go sideways and when they fall behind. And when people make major mistakes that they shouldn't make. And maybe that's not fair. How can you hold it to a coach when somebody like totally goes out there and just fumbles a football? That's not the coach's fault. But like, I do think there's a fair question to be asked of like, okay, what do you do when things go wrong? I think in today's NFL, you need to be able to offer, we're down by 10 in the fourth, we can still go win this game. I've got the horses to go out there and be dynamic and come from behind. And they haven't. They haven't in the past.
Yeah, I think even I get what you're saying when you bring up the 10-point lead in the fourth. That is to a point where it's almost so dire that there's no question but you got to be aggressive, right? Like Kyle Shanahan facing a fourth and one from midfield down 10 in the fourth, he's probably going for that. If he's facing a fourth and one from midfield in the second quarter, he's punting that. Like there's a time and score that just kind of dictates what you have to do. What is happening now is even when the time and score isn't dictating it, you're still going for it more often. I think formulaic is a good word, and I don't mean to be like the Mr. Follow the Analytics 24/7 guy, because I think there's time where you can follow, you know, what you feel is right and your gut, but there is just a big portion of, you know, you convert this fourth down at any time in the game it's going to lead you to a much better chance at 7 points. And you have a kicker who is questionable at best, and this is a 50-yard field goal. Why is this even a question? It's 4th and 2, Kyle. Go for it. Like, you have a kicker you don't trust. It happened at the end of the Lions game. Happened in the Lions game a couple of times.
Yep.
In the Lions game, okay, whatever. It's the end of the season. You actually probably want to lose, even though they'll never admit it, because you want a better draft pick. You have nothing to play for at that point other than personal pride.
Yeah, it helped. It helps.
Why are you putting Jake Moody out there? Go for it on 4th and short from a 55-yard field goal. What is the point? I think there is just so many more opportunities for Kyle to make himself a little uncomfortable and do something that he normally doesn't feel is right, but the numbers suggest is right.
That's I think you're touching on kind of I think the same area where my head is, which is just, and that's what I mean by kind of robotic and formulaic. If Jake Moody goes out, you send him out there. You wanted him to go for it on 4th and 2.
Yeah,
but we could all agree, like, if he makes the field goal, well, that's probably a pretty good thing for the 49ers analytics in this particular football game. And the way Kyle's brain works is, we have arrived at 27-yard line, inact kicker should make kick. But kicker misses kick.
Yes.
And Kyle's like, that was not what we had planned. And it's like, I guess maybe it's unfair. Can you ask people to just be always ready for the unexpected? But that's my thing. 49er football doesn't feel like it's always ready for the unexpected. And the unexpected is going to happen. It's going to happen a lot.
So the Commanders-Eagles NFC Championship game, I think, is a great example of this. The Commanders' first drive, what, like a 17 or 18 play drive,
yes,
2 fourth down conversions, and then they,
and
on
then
fourth
they
and short,
the
they kicked a field goal. The first fourth down conversion was, it might have been right around midfield or maybe just on their own side.
I think
side.
It was just over the, somewhere in there.
It was close. So not in field goal range,
no.
But it was 4th and short. They go for it. They get it. Okay. And then they got another 4th and short, or maybe it was 4th and intermediate. It was in deep field goal range. The way the analytics model projects that is, okay, we could kick a missable field goal here. But again, it's missable. It's not even close to a sure thing. So the analytics suggests on 4th and 3 or whatever it was, better to go for it because you have a much higher probability of getting the first down than you do of making the field goal. Okay, so you get that one as well and you keep going. And then you get into chip shot field goal range and you get to 4th down again. 4th and short again, and the odds of converting on that 4th and short are basically the same as the odds on converting on the other 4th and short.
Maybe. The field gets a little shorter.
Similar.
The field gets a little shorter, but yes.
But the main difference is that field goal is now nearly for sure.
That thing's a cookie.
And exactly. That's the difference, and not that I necessarily agree with that decision by Dan Quinn and the Commanders, but I can understand it a little bit more because that field goal is like, yeah, you can count on that happening 99 out of 100 times.
Right.
Where the 50-plus yard field goal, like, okay, maybe if you get lucky, you're making that 7 out of 10 times, if you're lucky.
Right, right. Yeah, and those analytics, I think the one flaw in them is that they're not taking into account who's playing, what's the weather, who's the opponent,
yeah,
what are they good at. Do you know what I mean? Like, if you're the Commanders and you've got Jaden Daniels, then your 4th and 2 is not baked like every other 4th and 2. And that is something that I think that's what Steve Young was talking to last Friday when he talked about, like, let's lean into Brock Purdy's aggressiveness and athleticism a little bit more. Like, he needs to be able to challenge that line of scrimmage a little bit more, and he can. And so, just like anything else, every other year, I'm sure that all play callers spend a lot of time studying what worked and what did not work and what they want to try a little bit differently next year. And it's my hope that that's one of the things they try a little bit differently next year. I'd like to see when Brock Purdy is running, it's not because his butt is on fire and everything broke down around him. No, it's because they planned it that way. They gave him a read option, and what he saw was, oh, I can run 2 yards for the first down. Do that.
Yeah.
Do that. It's very hard to stop. We see it all over the place in the league. He's not Lamar. He's not Jaden. I think he runs just as fast as Mahomes does.
Mahomes isn't those dudes either.
And Mahomes does it all the time.
Ran for 2 touchdowns in the AFC Championship game and another big 4th down conversion.
And Brock did that against Detroit in a game they lost. He showed that ability. Let's go to Jose in Oakland. Thanks for calling, Jose. What's going on?
Hey, hello, guys. Thanks for taking the call. So, most people, they have a certain degree of genius, I guess you could say, whether it is scientific genius or in this case, like Kyle, you know, football genius, have a certain degree of COPD. It seems like they have obsessive compulsive disorder, OCD. And it seems to me like Kyle, at times, he has two things that are going for him that are going to keep him from getting the championship if he doesn't change. One, his ego. Okay? In his mind, my way is what works. If you don't do what I'm telling you, it's on you as a player. It's not on me as a coach. Okay? The problem with that is, like you said, there are things that are out of his control. And the way he coaches sometimes is like he's in control of everything, including what the other team is going to do. Where the obsessive-compulsive disorder falls is where if he knows very well that he has a bad kicker, why sometimes does he put himself in situations where he's going to be kicking for field goals, okay, instead of taking a chance? Because he cannot let himself take a chance. To him, if he does that, then he's deviating from what in his head should work. It seems like he's tripping on his own tie all the time. If he doesn't change, it's going to be another year where, you know, hopefully we're going to get to the NFC Championship game and we're going to lose again.
Jose, let me,
he doesn't get in.
Yeah, you're making some very interesting points. I want to ask you a question because that idea of I'm going to kick because that field goal should go through. And then it doesn't. So is your response, I'm genuinely curious here, is your thought, hey, Kyle, why don't you go for it on fourth down? Or, hey, Kyle, get a better kicker. Jose, how do you respond to that?
Well, there's a problem. How is he going to get a better kicker in the middle of the game? He has
well,
to
not,
work
no,
with
no,
what
I,
he has.
I mean, I'm not saying...
Unfortunately, what he has is
not Jose. You're not answering the question with the idea that, like, it's fourth and four and the play clock is running. Like, you can get a better kicker as quickly as next week. There are kickers sitting there. They had to do it twice this year. You know what I mean? Like, you
and,
go...
And that's,
yeah.
That's what I was telling about his ego. He refuses to admit when he makes a mistake. They made a huge mistake by drafting this guy. Okay? He was bad from year one. Granted, he made a few kicks, but he didn't see the consistency that the guy was supposed to have. I mean, he doesn't have to learn the playbook like all the other players do. Okay? He doesn't have to figure out defensive schemes. All he has to do is just kick the ball. That's his only job. And once he showed that he had no confidence in himself and he had the tendency to, you know, to miss field goals, why did they keep going at him instead of bringing some competition? The guys that brought him in last season when he got injured play a lot better than he did. So, like I said, his idea of this thing about him not accepting when he makes a mistake, that's one of his biggest faults.
Okay, Jose, before you go, what do you say when the Niners send Jake Moody out onto the field?
Shoot, man, that's enough for me, dog.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, thank you, Jose, appreciate it. Let me say this. Jose was spitting some interesting stuff there. I don't think that what you heard Kyle Shanahan say down the last few weeks of the season was him not admitting that Jake Moody was a mistake. I don't think that. What I think was he's not going to admit it then. You will know if Kyle Shanahan is ready to admit the mistake on Jake Moody based on what he does this offseason, not what he tells you right before week 16. Because Kyle Shanahan is not going to say that in a press conference. When you are in the midst of the game week and you're going with what you got, then you back those people. You encourage them. That's what teammates do. You have their back and you try to instill them with confidence. I think that happens a lot in sports where you'll hear a coach or a general manager say something in front of a microphone. You're like, oh my God, he gave him a vote of confidence. Well, there's a reason they call it the dreaded vote of confidence. Because very often you'll hear them get the vote of confidence, and next week they get fired. So I would be, this is how I'll say it, shocked if the Niners at minimum didn't bring in major competition in camp for Jake Moody, and that's if Moody even makes the camp roster. They were already scouting one of the top kickers in the draft. They were at his workout this week.
Yeah, I was just going to tell you about that. Yesterday, Andres Borregales. I don't know if I'm pronouncing
from Florida?
That right. Miami.
Miami.
Yeah, one of the top kickers in this year's draft.
And they were at his workout.
Get ready for another third-round pick on a kicker, huh? Is that what we're ready for? He's got his man, part two.
I don't think that would go over well.
No, it would not.
But doesn't mean it's not going to happen. Doesn't mean it's not going to happen. What would you rather they pick in the third round, a kicker or a running back?
Oh, God.
Exactly.
It's not that hard of a question.
Exactly. No, it is kind of. There's a lot of PTSD on that.
If you can promise me that the kicker's really good, kicker. But other than that, no. Running back.
Okay. All right.
Doesn't make me feel good, though.
Are the Giants cheap? Is that a fair criticism?
They spend a good amount of money. I just don't think they spend it wisely. I don't know if I can call them cheap. I just think I can call them not smart.
Well, okay. Steven is on our call screen today, and Steven does a lot of work covering the San Francisco Giants. And when I said, are the Giants cheap, he just looked at me and went, gave me a big old thumbs up emoji. So, I mean, here's how I'd answer it. You know, 2 years ago, they had a payroll that I thought was unacceptable. I don't think that the San Francisco Giants should ever not be one of the top 10 payrolls in baseball. Do they spend money? It's been a little bit different each year in how they've gone about doing it. Sure, the Willie Adames contract makes it sound like, hey, look at us. Look at us flexing our muscle financially. And last year, I do think they bled in to the top 10 in payroll. I think, in fact, they were 10.
They were 10.
They were number 10. Okay, so that's better. But if you still look around baseball in terms of who's got money, who's got marketing, who's got that financial juice, the Giants, and I don't even know if all Giants fans know this, the Giants are absolutely unequivocally one of the top six or seven most powerful teams in baseball in terms of marketing, branding, their stadium, the surrounding area of the stadium, all of this. And so I do have trouble still. Like, I'm glad Buster Posey is running things, but the big dirty secret that I don't hear enough about is that I do not yet trust ownership of the San Francisco Giants. The green light, Adames, okay, great. Sure, you went after Judge, you offered it, and Harper, and whatever you think about the way the Correa thing went down. You know, I know the conspiracy theory, which is, oh, they didn't sell any tickets, so they backed out of the deal. But then so did the Mets, and the Mets are spending money like it's going out of style. So, like, I don't know the ins and outs of that, but when I hear, before the offseason even starts, the Giants' ownership is upset at the way this played out, and the response to that is we're peeling back on payroll. And then you watch the way this played out, which is we'll give you Adames, but oh, by the way, you're not really going to spend much else, and now we're going to ship off one of our relievers and do nothing with the money. Those kinds of things, there are little clues that this ownership group is absolutely, completely unwilling to battle the Dodgers. Like, there's absolutely no way to battle the NL West if you don't want to flex your financial power. And do I think they do that all the way? No, I do not. I absolutely do not. Does that make them cheap? That word's a little strong for how I would describe it. I'll just describe it the way I did. I do not think they flex their financial power to the end.
They've been no worse than 12 in terms of highest total payroll in each of the last, like, my last decade.
They basically should never be below 7.
Yeah, you're probably right. I think where I'm coming from is sometimes they feel a little cheap because they're not spending as much as the Red Sox or the Yankees or the Dodgers or the Cubs or whoever else you throw up there. I also feel like even when they're spending money, it is not always in the best spot. And I feel like that's what the Solaire contract was last year.
For sure.
So you could throw the Solaire deal onto the 2024 payroll, and it makes it look like they're trying harder. But we all knew that Solaire wasn't going to be this crazy great acquisition. We had hopes that maybe he'd hit.
I thought he'd be better than it was.
We had hopes that maybe he'd hit 25 home runs. I don't know how you felt. I didn't think he was going to hit 30 and be the first Giant to hit 30 since Barry Bonds.
I never predict 30 in Oracle Park.
No.
Like 30 never. Is bananas in that ballpark.
And we can, you know, they can fall back on, well, we made a competitive offer for Ohtani, we made a competitive offer for Judge, and we made a competitive offer for Bryce Harper, and same thing for Stanton way back when. But they just don't want us. So what do you want us to do? Spend money elsewhere just for the sake of spending money? No, I want you to be smarter in the people you're going after. You won baseball games and World Series by having the best pitching staff in baseball, and by being one of the best fielding teams in the league, not by having these crazy 30 home run hitters in your lineup. So spend money the way that you know it works for your franchise, instead of chasing this crazy dream of a player that you're probably not even convinced is ever going to come to you, even if you offer the most money.
Well, and it's a very, very tough spot, because what the last regime was selling for a long time is that we're ready to spend once that farm system starts paying off. Because if you look around baseball, and this is true, like teams that are really consistently good, you do have to have homegrown talent. And so that's great to say, we're going to spend as soon as the homegrown talent gets here.
It just never gets here.
The homegrown talent gets here, and you're like, oh, they're not that talented. So now we got to start over with new homegrown talent, and you look down at the farm system, and you go, oh, there isn't any.
And if you don't have a good farm system developing players that's on your big league team right now, you can go out and sign a free agent or two for big money, but 2-3 good players on your team, you're not going to be good.
No.
So what's the point of spending that money in the first place?
It has to be augmented. And maybe that's a little unfair, because I think we do go into this year going, is Elliot Ramos actually all-star level? Is Tyler Fitzgerald actually that? If they are, is Hayden Birdsong this? If they are, well, then here you go. The homegrown talent is starting to pay off. But those are still big ifs, number one. And number two, Baseball America's top 100 just came out. You know how many Giants are on it?
One. Bryce Eldridge. Who's what? He's in the top 10, right?
I don't even think I think he might be in the teens. I'll look it up. Yeah. I don't know if he made the top 10. I could be wrong on that, but he's big time prospect, but he's the only one who made the top 100. Hey, this real quick, also from our guy Slates.
Oh,
Anthony Slater has this two things. Number one, Steph Curry officially cleared to play tonight. So Steph versus Shea is on. Okay, so we got that aspect of it. But then listen to the rest of his tweet. This is interesting. This is unconfirmed. But Slater says, it sounds like Quinton Post could enter the starting lineup.
Oh.
TJD's got a migraine headache, and not a real one. This is not good news for him, because his minutes have slowly been going away, and Quinton Post is part of the reason. But here's what Steve Kerr said. He would not reveal his starting lineup, but simply said to the assembled media, we're trying to set a record for the most starting lineups used in a season. So at least the joke and the indication was there's another change, and Slater believes it's Quinton Post, and the way I sort of view this is Slater's not going to guess on Twitter and guess wrong. So I'm going to bet it's about a 90% chance that Quinton Post is starting this game tonight. Mm.
So you don't think it's Pat Spencer is the change in the starting line?
I do not, but he made the Rising Stars game and Quinton Post did not. So how about that?
Yeah, for the G League. He's on the Rising. I didn't know they did that for the G League.
And TJD made it for the actual established team. And the Warriors are almost like, actually, he's not rising that much. He's kind of falling at the moment.
He started last night, played the first 6 minutes or whatever, and then did not play the rest of the game.
Didn't play again. So I think that the simplified way to have a conversation right now, more shooters. TJD's not a shooter. Quinton Post is. TJD's not a shooter. Guy Santos is. Shooters.
I felt kind of silly talking about this last week. I felt that Quinton Post should be starting. Because, I mean, this is a guy who had one nice game, and he's, what, the 57th overall pick? And, you know, okay, we don't know a ton about him. Is he a flash in the pan? But given the weaknesses of the roster and the lineup, I don't know how you can't play him more, especially alongside Steph. After the game against the Bulls, when he made five threes and scored 20 points, Steve Kerr, I don't think Steph said this at all, Steve Kerr said to the media, Quinton Post made Steph Curry the happiest man inside of Chase.
Yeah.
I don't know how that can be the truth and how you can't just pair that up more often.
Right.
I'm kind of a little shocked it took this long for him to be in the starting lineup, honestly.
It's an interesting skill set. Again, I'm not going to go anywhere with regard to Quinton Post is going to be a great player in the league or like whatever. It's an interesting skill set that the Warriors need.
Retire the number.
Yeah, exactly.
What number does he wear?
Who the hell knows?
21. Yeah, 21.
Is it?
21.
Oh, okay.
He used to wear 12, so he switched it, I think.
You could have told me anything other than 30, and I'd have believed you. But anyway, guess who's on the line? It's Caleb in Livermore. Do you recognize that name?
Oh, our winner.
Yeah, our winner is on the line. Hey, Caleb, congrats. We're looking forward to meeting you, man.
Same here, man. How's it going, guys?
Let's go. What a big day.
Yeah, exciting, man. I thank you guys, man. I appreciate it. I can't wait for it. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, thank you for listening, man.
Of course, of course. So, I know that the Quinton Post stuff, first of all, that's exciting. I get to see him in the starting line for the first time. But two things I want to talk about. Actually, I'll just keep one thing. If you guys had to get any player at the trade deadline, that has to be realistic, right?
Yep.
Who would that player be, and how do you think it would fit into this team? Who would it be? And it has to be realistic, though.
Yeah. Caleb, again, congrats. Thank you for listening. Thanks for the call.
And we'll see you on March 3rd.
We're going to see you on March 3rd. I have a sense that you and I are going to answer this the exact same way.
Me and you?
Yeah, you want to do it at the exact same time? I'll count down 3, 2, 1, and then let's say the name.
I hope this name is realistic.
Okay, ready? 3, 2, 1,
Zion.
Cam Johnson. Okay, it's not the same person.
I thought he was going to say Cam Johnson, too.
I thought he was going to for sure say Cam Johnson. Yeah, I'd answer Cam Johnson. Because I thought
you were a Vucevic guy. Huh?
I am. But because Cam Johnson, it is realistic, but I don't get the vibe that the Nets and Warriors are going to get together on two different deals.
Cam Johnson's definitely more realistic than Zion, though.
Yes. I really don't get the sense that Zion's going to go in.
Probably not at the deadline.
No, I really don't think so. But we'll see. But Cam Johnson, to me, really good fit. Unbelievable two-way player. Young, not that expensive. And however long his contract goes, I'd want him here anyway. That would be a feel good acquisition.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
If I were to take Zion off the table, I think I would probably then say Cam Johnson.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily because I think Cam Johnson makes the Warriors a title contender or makes them even a team that could win a playoff series. Although if things fall right, I guess I wouldn't be shocked. But it's because he's got two more years left on his deal. And that's just a really, really good player to have on your team for more than just a year.
And by the way, John Bloom, who my friend who's the voice of the Suns, who is going to join us, by the way, on Friday. Right?
Nice.
Come on. The Suns are in town. Anyway, remember when when we talked to him last time, he could not stop beaming over Cam Johnson.
Sounded like one of his favorite players
Seriously,
ever.
Like the player, the person, the all of those things. And Cam, of course, that's where he used to play. Okay. 888-957-9570 if you want to weigh in on this. The disappointment level for any of these three teams, which order do you sort of put it in? Warriors, 49ers, and Giants in this current moment. Warriors Wednesday is brought to you by Freedman's Appliance. Come see their full selection of in-stock luxury appliances in live working vignettes. Visit Freedman's Appliance in Pleasant Hill today. Grandy is in for dibs. This is Willard and Dibs.
Setzebaugh, Collier, back to Setzebaugh. against the zone, holds a man on his hip, Post chases him outside, takes the jumper, it's off the front rim, Schroeder comes back, rebound, finds Post, Post right down Broadway to the rim, and he dunked it. Heel back to Post, above the break left side, jumper up, it's good, a three ball for Post.
He does not mind firing him up there, does he?
No, he doesn't. He's not shy. Nope. Peyton, low right, look at the Post up, shoveled up top, there goes Post, another three for Quinton Post, 80-69.
He doesn't even think about passing it if he's open.
Yeah.
Dub Nation, it's Quinton Post. You're listening to Willard and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
And he shouldn't. Like, that's the whole message, right? If you're a three-point shooter and you're open, shoot the ball. I don't want to be passing out of an open look.
Good shot for you, created.
Quentin. Yep.
You got to put it up.
The word is that Quinton Post is potentially in the starting lineup tonight. Steph is in. OKC is here. E-Dog Evan Giddings is 10 minutes away. It's also time for Triples for Autism, brought to you by Pettinelli Financial Partners and the Autism Society, San Francisco Bay Area. Warriors made 17 three-pointers last night. And that means another donation from Pettinelli to the Autism Society San Francisco. Dennis Schroeder with five of them. Pods had four. Wiggins and Moody, three each. That's the 23rd donation of the year for Triples for Autism. To make a donation yourself or get involved, go to sfautismsociety.org. That was Triples for Autism, brought to you by Pettinelli Financial Partners and the Autism Society San Francisco Bay Area. Pettinelli is here for you, offering financial guidance and support throughout life's milestones. Go to PettinelliFP.com.
It would have been nice if they hit 18. That final stretch where they got like three offensive rebounds and attempted four threes. Did you watch the reaction of the bench during that possession?
You should have seen my reaction having the Warriors minus 11.5 while they were up by 11. Yes, I did see the bench's reaction.
I imagine it's like most of us probably watching the game at home where we're all like, oh, three! Oh, miss. Oh, offensive rebound! Kick it out! Three! Oh, miss. Oh, offensive rebound! Just over and over.
And gambling is so stupid because it's an 11-point game with 30 seconds to go. We shouldn't have cared that much. But we did. How does one of those not go in? It's unbelievable.
Steph gets off the bench, starts to celebrate, it misses. He like kind of drops his arms down, and then they get the offense ready. He kicks it back out, and he puts up the three fingers, slowly brings it down. And
I mean, it's like, dude, are your arms hurt? They're going up and down so much. Anyway, one more reminder, Slam Dunk in Vegas contest is on. Travel, accommodation for four. If you win, you and three guests go to Vegas, and each of your guests get $5,000 apiece. Oof. Total of $20,000. Ultimate viewing experience for the first two rounds of the College Basketball Championship. Download the free Odyssey app, log in, listen for a minimum of 1 hour each day, and you get a daily entry every day. That's all you have to do. Download the app, log in, listen for at least an hour, and you're in. Okay? It's a national contest. Download the Odyssey app. You might be headed to Vegas in March with $20,000. So we had a couple of funky NBA things on the way out the door here.
Okay.
Adam Silver said something weird on the Dan Patrick Show that we want to throw out there. But before we do that, I just saw this little factoid on the World Wide Web, and I thought I would share it with you because it is a wowza.
Okay.
A wowza. Are you ready for this?
I'm ready.
Either last night or tonight, did the Sixers play tonight? Sixers, they do. Okay, the Sixers are playing right now. They're hosting the Sacramento Kings. In the career of Joel Embiid, this is his 400th missed game. Are you ready for the number? You know what I'm about to give you, right?
How much money he's been paid to sit on the bench.
Ready?
I'm ready.
$125.7 million.
Rain dance!
To watch ball.
Cash me out one time!
$125.7 million. That Barry Zito contract that ticked everyone off for so many years, that was the total deal. $125.7 million.
Cha-ching!
While sitting on the bench. Joel Embiid.
I think the total number of games he's played was 466.
Okay.
And he sat 400.
At least it's still ahead. Check in this time next year. I don't know if he might have caught up.
He's played 446.
Okay.
And he's missed 400.
So he's up by 46.
He's missed 47% of his career regular season
games. There it is. There it is.
So how many playoff series wins do they have with him?
Playoff series wins?
Yeah, let's
oh,
see.
God, probably not more than
one,
a couple.
Two.
Two, three?
Two. Three. Four.
Kawhi stole the one from him.
Seriously.
Five. They've won five series.
Oh, my God. And none of them that have, like, mattered. None of them are the Eastern Conference Finals.
They never won the Eastern Conference Finals. He's never been to the Eastern Conference
Finals. There you go. So he's never won in the semifinals either.
Kawhi stole the Eastern Conference semis from him with that corner
with that
bouncing
three jumper
in game seven.
He's probably also number two on the list of how much money has he made watching basketball.
You know who else was on that team that lost to Kawhi and the Raptors,
who?
The Philadelphia team? Jimmy Butler.
Oh!
The farthest Kawhi got was when he had Jimmy Butler.
That playoff genius Jimmy Butler. Well, I tell you what, I got good news for all these dudes.
Okay.
Jimmy, Joel, Kawhi, Stephen is bursitis. Guess what, everybody? Every quarter's about to get shorter.
What?
I'm probably in a minority. As we get more involved in global basketball, the NBA is the only league that plays 48 minutes. And I am a fan of four 10-minute quarters. I'm not sure that many others are. I mean, putting aside what it means for records and things like that, I think that a two-hour format for a game is more consistent with sort of modern television habits. I don't think people in arenas aren't asking us to shorten the game, but I think as a television program, being 2 hours, that's Olympic basketball, is 2 hours, you know, college basketball, of course, is...
Yeah, but if you like it, I'd say it has kind of a little bit of a push there.
Yeah, it's such a dramatic change to the game. I mean, I think something like that would have to be talked more about.
That's Adam Silver on the Dan Patrick Show saying that he likes the idea of 10-minute quarters. It's a better TV show.
Who's asking for this?
I have no clue.
No one is asking for this.
Nobody.
No one has a problem with the length of a basketball game.
Listen...
I have a problem with the length of the regular season.
This is a weird thing because I think that this is a parroting of attention spans and the baseball conversation we all had 2-3 years ago, which is the pitch clock. And I've long said this. I still don't even think that the pitch clock had anything to do with the length of the game. It had to do with how much action was happening in that window. In fact, I've heard from the only downside of the pitch clock is that sometimes, hell, if you're running a little late to get to a game, there's a little traffic or something, you show up, it's the fourth inning.
Or you try to go get food, you miss a whole inning.
Exactly. So I'm for the pitch clock because the pace is better. But this idea of I just spent all this money on parking and tickets and food, and you're trying to shuttle me out of here in 2 hours? No, chill. I just got here. I want to make an evening out of this. I don't need your 7:10 tip-off to be over at 8:58. I just got here.
I remember, for whatever reason, my dad and I went to a Giants game. I must have been, like, I don't know, 12 years old. And we would go, like, once or twice a year, but we wouldn't have great seats. For whatever reason, I don't know if it was a birthday or something, we splurged. My dad splurged, and we got, like, good seats a couple of rows behind the Giants dugout. And it was, like, my dream, right? My dream. And the Giants, I think, got one hit, and the game was over in 2 hours and 5 minutes. And I felt cheated.
You cried.
Yeah, I probably did on the drive home.
You were like Brandon Crawford in that picture.
Exactly. I felt cheated. When I'm at the games, I would like the game to go 5 hours.
Turns out that wasn't even Brandon Crawford. That was Grandy. I mean, do we really know? Do we have proof that that was Brandon and not Grandy? We don't. All right, everybody. It's time for Warriors basketball. Is Quentin Post going to start or not? There's only one way to find out, and that's to stay tuned to Evan Giddings with Warriors Live, Dubs, and the best team in the West tonight at Chase Center, brought to you by Fremont Bank, here for you, here for good. Want to do it again tomorrow?
Absolutely. We got Steve Kerr tomorrow.
Steve Kerr on the show tomorrow. We're doing it again tomorrow for Grandy, for Lucas, for Steven. I'm Mark. Shoot your shot. It's all you got.